upwards of 80-85% of patients aren't even being hospitalized, right? Because their own body, even though they've never seen this virus before, revs up appropriately to fight it off and get rid of it. And then, unfortunately, in some patients, for reasons we don't fully understand yet, that signaling system gets carried away and goes into overdrive. And it's not only no longer fighting off the virus, but it's actually starting to attack the body itself, and particularly the lung, and cause what we call an adult respiratory distress syndrome, or ARDS. And it looks like a large component of that is due to interleukin-6 and cytokines just running haywire in the body, for want of a better way of putting it. So we have to be careful, because ruxolitinib can also dampen down interferon signaling. So you don't want to overdo that and stop the body fighting the virus, but you definitely want to stop this bad outcome in terms of respiratory failure and needing ventilation. So the idea is to try and appropriately, with the right dose of the compound, sort of weave the therapeutic ratio so that you can keep the body with an adequate antiviral response, but at the same time stop the cytokine storm so somebody doesn't get into trouble. So I don't know, hopefully that makes a little more sense.
It did. So the idea is ruxolitinib would be used for someone who is critically ill, not necessarily someone with mild COVID-19 symptoms.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way of thinking about it currently. So, look, we don't know. We have to test it. But the idea right now, and the people in most need are exactly the ones you outlined. So somebody's really ill with COVID-19 infection. It looks like they're having a cytokine storm. They're starting to have respiratory trouble, and they're not yet on a ventilator. And we think that's the right point to intervene, to try and switch off that storm and avoid ventilation and avoid death. So you're absolutely right. Our initial study, which we're working on with the FDA now, would be to treat that exact population you outline, somebody who's pretty ill, pre-ventilation and getting into trouble. And, you know, we're waiting FDA approval to get the study going, and hopefully that'll happen very, very soon. Now, there are two other questions. Will it work in later patients on a ventilator? And that's something we want to study also. So we'll be working on protocols there, and potentially, you know, earlier as well, and trying to prevent even earlier this all happening. But that's not the focus of what we're talking about today. It's exactly what you outlined. Somebody who's now in trouble with the infection, the cytokines are starting to rage in the body, if I can use that term, and we want to switch it off as much as possible with the right dose of ruxolitinib so they don't get into trouble, but they still keep their host viral response.
All right, well, let's take it to the FDA process. How has regulations changed at all during a pandemic as far as trying to get a drug like this available as quickly as possible? And can you also explain the expanded access program that Incyte has put into place to make ruxolitinib available to some patients who are in those critical stages?
Yeah, no, all good questions. So obviously our entire industry is appropriately regulated by the Food and Drug Administration. You know, everything we do, we work very closely with them and get permission to do things. And it's usually a transactional back and forth process that can sometimes take weeks or months, right? But given exactly you outlined the pandemic situation, we don't have that luxury. And fortunately, you know, the agency has been very responsive. They've set up committees to respond very quickly to proposals from academia, from biotech companies, from pharma companies. And for the better part of last week, we're working, and we still are, very closely with them to do it. And the whole process is massively accelerated to try to get therapies to patients as quickly as possible. So if you step back, you know, there's at least three ways that we will appropriately make this available. The first one is a form of compassionate use. It's called a single patient IND, a single patient investigational new drug application. So that means any physician treating any patient in the United States can call us up and say, I'd like to use ruxolitinib for my patient with COVID-19 or a cytokine storm. You know, can you provide the drug? And then very quickly, within hours, We can work with them on an individual basis to fill out the right documents, get them off to the FDA, and literally mail drug to them to start. And that can happen within a day sometimes. So that's one mechanism. But you can imagine, you know, when you're dealing with thousands or tens of thousands of patients, that's not a very, can get very overwhelmed very, very quickly, right? You can't just keep processing single patient INDs. So the next step is with the permission of the Food and Drug Administration to do something called an expanded access program. And that, what that does is make the drug available within a protocol, but a pretty simple protocol, where that everybody would get the compound if they meet the criteria. So if they have COVID-19 infection, are in respiratory trouble, have evidence of cytokine storm, they just apply, open the protocol at their particular hospital, and they can get drug for it, even without going through the process of requesting it from you or dealing with the FDA, because the protocol's open. And we're working with the FDA to open that particular program called an expanded access program also as soon as possible. And then the last piece is to prove in a standard highest level of evidence fashion that this actually works. So that, and the way to do that is to do a randomized phase 3 study. So that's what we'll do with Novartis globally, is because you still haven't proven definitively that this absolutely works. And so we'll be, again, working with the FDA, hopefully getting closure in the next day or two, to have a global protocol. It'll probably be in roughly 350 patients, where patients will be randomized either to ruxolitinib or to a placebo control, and we'll get a readout very quickly, given the situation, whether the drug works or not. If it's positive in that last step, if that randomized phase 3 works, then you apply to get it approved for the indication. So everybody can then use it without anything I've just mentioned. And in that particular situation, the agency's also made available a pathway that can approve things very quickly. It's under what's called emergency use authorization, an EUA. There's an act now that you'll see, you know, if the Gilead compound, the antiviral remdesivir, works, or the hydroxychloroquine randomized studies are positive, they'll just get an emergency use authorization. So you won't go through this classic, you know, one-year process to go back and forth with the regulatory agency to try and prove that your drug works. They'll just accept the data and approve it. And you're already seeing that with diagnostic tests. So a lot of tests that are available out now, PCR-based tests, and very soon serology, are all approved under this act, this Emergency Use Authorization Act, and hopefully very soon with therapeutics. But you have to prove in a randomized fashion that it works. So hopefully that makes sense. So just to reiterate, for us, there'll be three mechanisms initially: a single patient IND, an expanded access program, and then the randomized study. If the randomized study is positive, we'll apply to have the drug authorized for use widely.
So there are some systems in place to make the drug available to people right now, and the randomized study is looking to prove that it works so that it can be authorized to be made available to anyone who needs it. What would that rollout look like? Are there any issues with manufacturing? Or I know this is already a widely used drug by your company, but what would it look like once it's approved, trying to get it out to as many people who need it as possible?
Now, that's a superb question. You know, it's the same for manufacturers right now testing compounds. You know, how much, and even vaccines, how much do you do at risk and be an optimist and assume your drug's going to work or your vaccine's going to work and scale up production so it's ready? So you're right. We're in a somewhat fortunate position in this. It's not an investigational compound. It's a marketed product. It's been on the market since 2011. So we have a lot of inventory. We know we have ample supply now to meet the demand, even if it got into the tens of thousands over the next month. So we're in a good position. We have ample supply to meet any U.S. patient request. Outside of the United States, it would be Novartis's responsibility. You know, that's our partner ex-U.S., and they in the same position. They're in a very good inventory state, as far as being able to apply the drug should we get requests.
Is there any kind of timeline you can offer as far as when the clinical trials might be through. You mentioned that you're looking for approval in the next day or two. How long would it take after that approval happens?
So that's just to be clear, that would be to start the study. And then, you know, the particular centers would activate it. Now, that activation process in a more traditional model could take 3 to 6 months. Obviously, that's not going to happen here. We need to work with our partners at academia to open this in days. So as soon as we have FDA approval, we're ready to go. We'll go to sites and ask them also to try and move very quickly to open it. Hopefully that'll, as I said, happen within days. And then you have to enroll the study. Again, a traditional study with 400 patients could take a year or two. That's not going to happen here. Some of these trials with some of the IL-6 inhibitors, for example, have enrolled in days. So we expect, just given the pandemic and the need, that again, the study will enroll relatively quickly. And then the last piece is for the readout. So you'll have to wait, potentially once it's completely enrolled, for, you know, 2 to 4 weeks to get a complete readout whether it actually works or not. I know that sounds frustratingly slow, but it's an unbelievable place to be. The fact that you could potentially open a study, conduct the study, and have a readout in a couple of months would be an incredible place to be. And obviously, if it works, make it available to patients. So that's the idea.